All right. Well, good morning, everybody. As always, you're listening to the AOHP Caring for Healthcare Professionals podcast. If we hadn't met before, I'm Corey Worden. I'm the current host of the podcast, as well as the producer and the AOHP Region 2 director and the National Professional Development Committee chair. So, as always, there's plenty of opportunities with AOHP if anybody's interested in getting involved with anything that we do, whether it be chapter, region, national, or any other productions. We're always happy to hear from you, so we hope that you'll reach out and get in contact. There's always opportunities with the podcast and the webinars as well. So speaking of which, we're going to get into a great episode today. So today we're talking about a topic that is always important. It's something that's been going on for ever since needles and sharps have been a thing, and it's one of those things that's a continual improvement matter, and we're always trying to get better at it so we can reduce those incidents. And that, of course, is needle sticks and sharps injuries, which we all know are very high risk because not only do you have the physical injury, which is usually a puncture or a cut, but you've got the potential for a communicable disease exposure. So this is something that is always on the minds of healthcare professionals, especially occupational health. So with that in mind, we're going to get right into it and we're going to talk through this thing. So we got two great guests today. Today we have Lisa Nelson and we have Dr. Susan Gallagher. So we're going to go ahead and get right into the topic. Lisa, let's start with you if we could. If you want to give our listeners a quick introduction about yourself, your career, experiences, anything that you want to add, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Corey. So I have been a nurse for over 20 years, and my background has been in areas such as management administration, telemetry, critical care, community health, and also for a short stint, for a couple of years at least, I was in talent acquisition as well, going after the talent to bring into them into the healthcare arena. And now I'm currently in the occupational health nurse role, and I've been doing that for about 4 years. And I am surprised at how really complex this is, and just the different layers of it. And I have used every skill that I've used in my whole nursing career in this particular job. And it's just been a great learning experience, and I am not bored. COVID has kept me on my toes, and it's just really been a great, interesting ride in occupational health nursing.
That's great. We're glad you're here. That's definitely, I fully agree with that. It's certainly a roller coaster. It's good to have good people like yourself on board. All right. And
Thank
Dr.
you.
Gallagher, how about yourself?
Yeah, thank you very much, Corey. And it's great to meet you, Lisa, because I don't think we've met before. And I think that this will be a really fun hour. And I love to talk with you about some of the background that you have.
Sure, great.
As you know, I'm a registered nurse. I do have a master's degree in religion and social ethics. And then I have a master's degree in nursing. And then I have a PhD in public policy ethics. So I'm really interested in what we call the just distribution of healthcare goods and services. And I have been involved with a number of healthcare organizations, hospitals, clinics, vendors, and wanting to prepare, and create better products for us. And so, to that end, I have an opportunity to kind of get out to a lot of different facilities nationally and internationally. So it's been really nice for me. I think what brings me here today, and I first have to say, I am not an expert in needle sticks, but I do, I'm a vice president of the Association for Safe Patient Handling Professionals, and many of you are familiar with that group. We're the group that really works to, help occupational health professionals address the issues of worker safety associated with patient handling and early mobility. And Corey, we did a podcast, didn't we, earlier in the year looking at those two topics. That was a lot of fun. But, I think this is why I think I'm here. I think a lot of the issues are similar, right? Because we still have workers who are injured by way of, handling patients. And some of those are not only career ending, but life ending. We were at a conference a couple of years ago, right? And this group of us, you know, they came up and they were crying and they said, "Oh, we're so glad that you're here because we need to talk about it. One of our favorite nurses had, you know, incurred a patient handling injury, had back surgery, did poorly, two more surgeries, and then didn't survive the last surgery." And so, you know, they were all on board with it. But the fact is, we've got what, 6,800 acute care hospitals in the country, lots of nursing homes, and we still have a lot of manual handling. But that's really not the topic for today, so I don't want to get too far down into the weeds, except to say that I think that there are common issues between the two in terms of we have the science, we have the data, and we still continue to have injuries. The other reason why I might be here is I am associate editor for Workplace Health and Safety. And so that's a journal that looks at, you know, it addresses the needs of occupational health professionals, not simply in healthcare, but in all areas. But wow, we get a lot of submissions on needle sticks, research that's being done, changes since the, you know, COVID situation, which, you know, apparently just like pressure injuries, you know, we're seeing so many more, you know, that's a patient injury, but we're seeing so many more needle sticks apparently since then. Yeah. So there must be some issues that, Lisa, you could address probably better than I could in terms of why that's happening. I mean, I can only speculate. But that's kind of what I bring to the table. It's wonderful being here. I will be presenting at the 2022 AOHP conference. It's coming up shortly, looking at, you know, how we really address the emotional and physical elements of a workplace safety program. So, you know, I feel like I have a lot of involvement, but it's all a little bit from the periphery. So with that said, thank you very much for inviting me. And I look forward to this hour.
Great. That's great information.
Definitely. Yeah, we appreciate both of y'all being here. It's going to be good conversation. All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and we'll get into the details. So like we said there, we're talking about those needle sticks and sharps injuries, which of course you've got the physical injury. Then you've also got the potential for communicable disease from the potential bloodborne pathogens or body fluids or anything that's going on with that. So this is going to be encompass, of course, your hypodermic needles, your scalpels, anything that's going to be considered a needle or a sharp. So the first question, of course, I'll bring to both of y'all is, in your experiences and your observations or your research, how do these things tend to pop up? Like, have you seen them from drawing blood or from the operating room or from giving injections, IVs? What are the types of things that y'all have seen in any kind of trends or anything notable? Lisa, let's start with you on this one.
Okay, well, so I, most of the times I'm seeing these with insertions of IVs and disposing sharps and those kinds of components. And some of the commonalities, Corey, that I'm seeing is, I don't know, Dr. Gallagher alluded to it just a little bit, is when I see in common is there seems to be, I don't know if it's the additional stress with the COVID and everything that we've gone through, because we've gone through so much in the last 2 years, a sense of not being very mindful when either disposing sharps or, you know, activating the safety features. And I see staff sometimes, you know, occurring, getting some of these injuries by not being fully present. And I'm not sure if this is a culmination of everything that has happened and the pressures, the additional pressures, maybe some of the short staff, and everyone just feels that they're on the go, go and go. And the tension and focus, lack of focus, if you will, that's happening. I think that's been a commonality in a lot of the injuries that I've seen. And I think there's an opportunity for us as occupational health professionals to address and certainly recognize that the staff is stretched. The staff has stress. There's a lot of tension that's just permeating everywhere in our hospital. And I think addressing that and having them be mindful that once you are handling sharps, once you're disposing of them, once you're passing equipment to colleagues, we need to take that time to be mindful and be fully present so that we can prevent some of these injuries. And that lack of focus, if you will, and I think the attention of the stress is showing up when we see these needle stick injuries. At least that's been my experience here. And I'm in a small community hospital, about 150 beds. I have about 1,500 employees. And I see that as a commonality that's showing up in this space right now. So that's my point of view.
Lisa, did you say that you were with the Northwell system?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So, you know, out here, I'm in California. Out here in California, I mean, we suffered. I mean, it was just incredible how our nurses suffered. But I think that Northwell was a facility, a system that was really hit hard, you know, and we saw it on the news. It was just amazing.
Yes.
And so to that end, you know, I have friends and colleagues and even people I don't know who are willing to talk with me who are healthcare professionals who have left the acute care setting just because it was too much. And so I agree with you.
Yes.
First of all, time is a factor, you know, in both of in safe patient handling and in sharps, issues with sharps. Time is a factor. And I think until we feel comfortable taking the time, I think that this will continue to be a factor. And I think the fact that, you know, we're having out here in California, now we're having layoffs in healthcare because the hospitals are in such an economic bind. And so, you know, what's that message there? We have a huge shortage and yet we can't afford the nurses that we have, right? And so I think that it's really stressful. And so, you know, when we think about sharps and injuries related to sharps, you know, even to take a step back and say, but what's happening right now that we have such a higher rate, and is it stress? And my second question, not to get too tangential here, it's not my nature, but this is so exciting, is, you know, as far as those individuals who are stressed and rushed and injuring themselves or have near misses, you know, has there been an opportunity to interview or talk with those individuals about, you know, what their thoughts are on improving the situation? Are we doing that right now, or is that an opportunity for us?
Well, if you're addressing me, Dr. Gallagher, we definitely are doing it. And I, you know, when I meet with the employees, that is part of the conversation. And I think that's an opportunity for us to improve and certainly address some of these issues. And, you know, I'll use a very simple example. I interviewed a nurse who had a needle stick injury. And, you know, and again, this really has to be done in a sensitive way. It's non-judgmental. It could have happened to any one of us. And we certainly put the groundwork in the beginning of the conversation to explain this is an opportunity for the team to learn. If you got stuck, then another person can conceivably make the same mistake. So we're learning from what happened with the experience. It's not about setting blame. And I am 5'10", right? So I'm this large woman. And this team member was, you know, a small adult. And when she showed me how she was disposing of the sharp, she actually has to reach up because it was mounted on the wall. So when we looked at this situation, simple fix, right? But we have to have the conversation. The sharp, they simply got a dispenser that was on the floor. So she wouldn't have to reach up or, you know, these kinds of things that are simple. A simple fix that we could do, but we have to look at what this means for each individual member when we study the injury, you know, why it occurred. So that's an important piece, and I'm really encouraged by these conversations, and I even think there's opportunities to partner with other team members as well once we have these injuries, especially related to stress, like employee assistance program, so that these folks can address these issues as well. So it's multifaceted.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Again, not to get too far into the weeds, but wouldn't it be wonderful to have a roundtable publication, you know, having a variety of individuals who've had injuries to talk about, you know, the example that you just gave. I mean, Lisa, that's fabulous. So I think, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity for those of us who are not directly doing this kind of work to provide resources. But that's great.
Absolutely. And those are great, great comments and perspectives there, because all of those things definitely play into it. And those are all reasons and factors and variables and things that affect our ability to control these types of injuries and exposures. So that's fantastic and great, great perspectives on that hazard analysis. Definitely well beyond, you know, the initial surface cause, you know, a needle stick from drawing blood, needle stick from giving injection. You know, there's a lot of factors involved there. So that's great that y'all are. I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
No, I said sure.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yep. Definitely. Yeah, a lot of factors. So that kind of brings us to the first thing there, which is, you know, with any hazard or any threat or anything that can hurt somebody, the first thing we always look at is if there's a way to completely eliminate it. And so, of course, in a lot of cases, if we're using a needle or a sharp, there's probably a reason for it. But there are, with new technology and advances, there are things like needleless devices. There's things like blunt tip needles. And so that kind of brings us to the either elimination, which is very tightly coupled with substitution, whether we're eliminating the need for the needle or whether we're changing the actual device we're using to make it safer. So I'll kind of put those two together to start with. Have you all seen anything or used anything that you found to be beneficial in terms of either eliminating the need for a needle or sharp or being able to completely change the device so that it renders it a lot safer? Dr. Gallagher, we start with you this time. Any thoughts on that?
You know, I don't think I have perspective on that. So I'm going to defer that to Lisa. I think you probably have more expertise in this area than I do.
So, you know, just personally, in my personal experience, one of these, I don't want to shout out any particular brand, but these little, the vantage point needles where you just, you don't actually have to do a lot for the needle to move out. You just push the button, if you will, and the needle disappears, and it just eliminates that possibility of getting stuck. And it's so easy and accessible. I personally love this needle. So whenever I use it. And I'm seeing that at other, you know, sites as well. I'm sure there are tons of other brands, but just in my personal experience, just switching from that in my practice, when we were, planting a lot of PPDs, that's a huge difference for me. And it's just such a great, simple, feature. And, you know, it's like we always say, the simpler, the better. I think it has improved safety. So I'm excited when I see equipment like that, which makes the work simpler, easier, and almost intuitive, right? Because you're almost going to push the plunger all the time, and you just push it, click, the needle goes away. And I think that's a great advantage. So I'm always looking for things that are simple and that just works with our intuitive nature. So that's just one of them that I personally really, really like.
Yeah, and that's key in change, Lisa, is that we want to not change workflow if not necessary. And so I think that's great. What about with IVs, if I may ask that question? What about IV starts? Is there anything innovative pertaining to that?
I haven't seen anything new in regards to that, but again, that's another piece, because I've been a nurse for over 20 years, and I really have seen some improvements in terms of innovation. Again, it's the same kind of concept. As soon as you insert it, you push the button, the sharp goes away. And I actually don't see a lot of those kind of injuries from inserting the IV. I've seen injuries where somehow, well, there's a million stories in the city, right? That staff have somehow hit each other's hand or something like that, and someone got hit accident got stuck accidentally. But because of that, the way that the needle vanishes, I haven't seen tons of injuries like I did years ago, when I was a staff nurse. So that's been a huge, I think, improvement. And I think if we keep going along that continuum, and focusing on safety and getting things out of the way that are not complicated, I'm encouraged by that.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
Great. Yeah, that's definitely good input. And so that kind of brings us over to the next thing, which is again kind of in that same lane where, if you were talking about this in a factory or on an oil refinery, they would be referring to this as safety by design, where they want to create the design to be as safe as possible so that it removes a lot of the necessary human decisions. And so, like you said, with those things like the devices that are retractable and things of that nature, it certainly helps. So that kind of brings us to the engineering controls, which are things like, again, like retractable devices or the safety latches that are on a lot of the needles. So in y'all's experience, have y'all seen any of these that you find to be more effective than others? Anything that has had any kind of intrinsic challenges to it? Like you said, Dr. Gallagher, anything that changes the workflow? Anything that you found as far as equipment solutions, anything that's helpful. And this may also include, like you said, Lisa, a minute ago, as far as sharp disposal, things like wall-mounted disposal boxes and the ANSI regulated heights, or the sharp disposal that are on the ground, or the kind that can be rolled to be put into a convenient place. Any thoughts on any of this as far as equipment and in particular, maybe helpful solutions, that kind of thing. Lisa, let's start with you this time. Any thoughts on equipment?
This is, I'm not sure for everything. One of the things that I've noticed is we do have some legacy equipment around, and I'm not sure if this is true at every single organization. So I talked a little bit about, like, for example, the retractable, the sharp, the vantage point, if you will. But we do have, for example, I somehow someone brought to me like three boxes of the old tuberculin syringes that don't have that safety feature. And it's not lost on me. Of course, these are difficult financial times, right? And everybody wants to use money effectively. But when you have some of these legacy, someplace in the stock room that we didn't use, and now we're using it, we need to have a conversation, or at least have it on the leadership level. Listen, this is here. It's not that it doesn't work, but it's not the best choice. And we need to decide whether or not we would want to use this equipment. And just because it's here, is that the best answer? So those kind of difficult conversations need to be had. And of course, in the center of that whole piece has to be safety, the safety of the workers, right? Are we using it just because it's here and we want to run through it because it's a legacy piece? Or are we going to just look at this in a comprehensive way and just say, are we not, let's get rid of this because, listen, there's a probability that more people will get injured. So there's that conversation as well.
And if I may ask a question, and Lisa, you may have this information and you may not, but what's the average cost of a claim, and then what's the high range for claims where there are sharps involved? What's your thought on that?
Go ahead, please repeat. I'm sorry, the phone was ringing here. A lot of moving pieces. I so apologize. I can't believe this is happening.
No, don't apologize at all. I was just curious about the cost of claims related to sharps and then what the high range is. Because, you know, what we find in safe patient handling is a lot of times there's that, you know, there's that conversation, especially around worker safeties. You know, what are the actual costs? And I know many of you have that, you know, listeners. But I just wonder, Lisa, for my benefit, if you could just share, you know, what are the national statistics around cost of claims pertaining to sticks, and then what's the high range?
Ooh, I don't have that information for you right now, but I could tell you, right, one of the biggest issues that we've had, and it's also add in the emotional factor, is if we've had, and this I have not had in 4 years, somebody who actually got an injury and now they have to follow up and, you know, and, you know, and see a specialist, which of course we will cover. And since it's not something that happens often, I don't have that data for you right now, but, it's a piece there that has to be looked at, and I'm going to get that information because I'm very interested to see how this injury that happened, the cost of it, and how I'm going to use that in an argument to change the way that we possibly practice or create opportunities to improve the way we practice. So that's a really important thing, I think, for an occupational health nurse to work on. And that's a great point, Dr. Gallagher, to have that data, of course, because as you know, when you go to administration, everything, money is a predominant issue, and we need to have that at our fingertips, right? To be able to discuss that in a fluid way. So that is a challenge for me, and I think that's a challenge for a lot of us. And I'm glad you brought it up because that's a piece that has to be worked on. And if we want our offices to be stronger, our practice to be stronger, we have to be fluid in the conversation of finance to our administration. So when you want change, you're advocating change, you want to be able to bring that data right away and say, this is the reason why, plus all these other things, so that we have solid arguments. So I really want to thank you for bringing that up.
Well, yeah, that's sweet of you to say that. So this is what I have seen used very successful, is to combine the data with the worker stories. And, you know, Northwell and then other, you know, large facilities, I mean, we still consider ourselves a family. And so it's always heartbreaking when someone, you know, even if it's an emotional, even if there isn't an economic component, I know the emotion, I agree with you, the emotional component is, you know, really frightening right now with so many different types of, I mean, we, you know, we have the typical bloodborne that we think about, but we've got a lot of emerging diseases and illnesses that are entering, you know, our world. And I think that makes it even more frightening for our healthcare workers.
Definitely. You know, those are all great, great perspectives. And it's interesting that y'all bring that up as well. I remember several years ago, we had this really intense conversation about that same topic, is that there's these interesting different perspectives on it, and each one can be justified, or not justified, but I say it's depended, so to speak. Like if you're having a debate, is on one hand, you've got, like you said, you've got the human experience and the emotional toll it takes. Because, you know, if there's a contaminated needle stick, you're talking about not only the particular injury or exposure, but then you've got the lab work, and you may have prophylaxis, and you've got all these things that follow on. And then that's got to be communicated at home. You know, I had this injury at work. It may cause cross infection, and we'll see how that goes. And then you may have a up to, you know, 90-day window to see what's going to happen. And that of course affects the family at home or whoever's involved in that person's life. So it's not just a workplace injury. It can go on for much longer and have a much higher impact. But then on the other side of that coin, when you look at the data, and I've seen a lot of times that people will say, if you're assessing this just by, you know, a quantitative risk assessment, they're going to say it's considered a low risk because the actual injury itself, typically lower cost than others. Like Dr. Gower, you mentioned a minute ago with patient mobility injuries, things like back strains, they tend to have a higher cost. They tend to have higher long-term costs, higher incurred and direct costs. So when you're looking at that way, and someone says, well, according to our math, it's a lower risk. But then somebody says, but you're not taking into account the fact this is going to affect that person's entire life and their perspective on their work going forward. So it's a lot to consider, and that's all very important. Like Lisa, you mentioned as well, is assessing the equipment that already exists and whether or not it's safe and whether there's a justification to replace it. And there's contracts involved, and there's central supply, and there's materials management. There's a lot going on there. So it's all kind of this balancing act. But that's great that y'all bring all that up. And that kind of brings us into the next thing, which is the administrative controls. And so this is important for the first reason, of course, is to make sure we have the best possible procedures. So there's things like neutral zones, and there's things like verbal cues, and there's all of these different factors up to and including things like lighting and situational awareness and all that good stuff. And patient communication, so they know what's going to happen, so they're less likely to move and things of that nature. But then at the same time, that also helps to build that trust and reliability, among teammates. So I was going to ask you what your thoughts are on as far as administrative procedures, things like processes, building situational awareness and conditioning and higher reliability, things of that nature. Dr. Gallagher, let's start with you this time. What are your thoughts on this area?
I do have some thoughts on this, just because they're universal for, all safety issues. And I do think the administrative procedures are really important. I do think, I'm all for whether we call it crucial conversation or other types of communication. I remember one physician years ago, and he would do a procedure, with sharps. And then he would say, Nurse Gallagher, you're not going to let me get stuck with this, right? And I thought, good for him. He set the tone. He let me know that we're going to take a minute, clean all this stuff up, and nobody was going to have an injury related to the procedure that he'd done. And I thought that was a great role model, So when we talk about high reliability and how we behave toward one another and the time factor, Lisa, that you brought up, I just think that that's really important. And I think that the organizations that do support, communication at a high level, right, for all their workers. And there are some organizations, and Northwell may be one of them, where we're expected to have communication with one another. And if we're working with sharps and someone comes in the room and they don't realize it, well, then that's an issue, right? So there needs to be communication to that end, and then also the patient expectation. And so I think that's, I think all that can be woven into that element of communication for purposes of reducing stress and then reducing certain types of injuries. Lisa, what's your thought on that?
I definitely agree with that. And one of the things that I'm seeing, at least, from my point of view, we've done such great work. There's been a lot of great work in terms of promoting safety. I think we need to do some more work, if you will, on enforcing some of our own policies. And just as a sidebar, when I walk around the hospital, what I'm seeing kind of like there's almost a fatigue, right? With, like, for example, mask wearing. I cannot tell you how many times I'm walking around reminding people, please put your mask up, not under your nose, or whatever. And this is across the board. Not it's staff, it's administration. There's a certain kind of fatigue that has set in. So it is important that we continue to make that a primary focus. If you really want to be a high reliability organization, and I don't know a single hospital that's not going to raise their hand and say, this is who I am, this is who I want to be, right? It's we have to live these things and we have to model this behavior, right? So if you want your nurse, and like you just mentioned, Dr. Gallagher, that doctor set the tone by saying, I'm not going to get, you're not going to allow me to get stuck with this. So everyone is present in the room and is on the same page and making safety a primary focus when we're doing the work. And I think more work needs to be done on that end to support everything that's already been done, the groundwork we've laid for promoting worker safety. It's the same thing with safe hand, patient handling. We have the equipment, we've bought it, but it's the culture that has to change to say, I'm going to take the additional 5 minutes to get the equipment to make sure that I don't have a lifelong injury. So there's an opportunity for us, if you will, to do the work of enforcing and living some of these things that we put on paper or we have policy for. We have to be about the work.
I wonder if I may ask a question. Why do you think there is this resistance with the administrative controls or procedures? What do you think, Lisa? I'm just curious. I mean, that may be an unfair question, but what do you think the resistance is? You know, across the country we see it, not just in, you know, pockets of the country.
Honestly, having been a staff nurse myself, sometimes it's just, and I think it's just about time. Like you don't have time. So, and actually, what you're saying is you don't have time to take care of yourself, right? You don't have time to take care of yourself. Meanwhile, you know, if you go on construction site, guys lifting, you know, how many, you know, 500 pound, whatever, they're using their safety equipment. You wouldn't catch them, you know, not doing that. I think it's like anything else, when you have to change culture, we have to embrace the fact that we are important enough, you are value enough to make sure that you use these things to take care of you. The consequences are too dire. Lifelong injury, lifelong consequences. Corey touched on it a little bit when he mentioned, listen, there's a conversation that has to be had at home, right? There's a conversation you have at home once you got a finger stick. My first job out of school when I graduated from my bachelor's degree was I worked when they used to have AIDS units, if you will. Now every floor is, you know, listen, we take care of everybody. But at the time, we didn't know what we know now. They were these specialized units. I got stuck. I was devastated. There was no question, you know, what the patient had. I knew that was the population that I wanted to serve, right? But there was no question what my risks were. But there was another piece to it. I had to bring that conversation home to you know, my boyfriend, who is now my husband, right? 20 something years later. But these pieces are right. Corey touched on it, is we have to bring this back home. So you have to say you are worth it, your family is worth it when you're resistant to taking the time to use these features. And I think it's changing culture. It's difficult, it's just hard work.
Yeah, and I have never seen a Sharps campaign address home. And
Yes.
you know, that might touch a nerve, right? And I always think about culture, and I don't mean ethnicity, I mean all elements of culture, right? And you know, probably different groups would have different values in terms of what home means to them. But I just think that would be such an interesting campaign. To tie Sharp's safety to that conversation at home and what that really means.
That's a great idea.
We should do a panel, right? Of people who've been who've had exposure to talk about what that felt like to go home and have that conversation. I don't know. I'm just brainstorming, and I
You're
guess it's
onto something.
So, anyway.
It's interesting that y'all bring that up. I certainly agree. You know, it's one of those things that, of course, there's factors like HIPAA and all kinds of, you know, privacy and whatnot that do play into that. But it's certainly a very real issue that does go home with us. You know, I was just thinking as y'all were talking about that, is I just recently saw the new Top Gun sequel with my wife the other day, and there's a scene on there where they're teaching these young Navy pilots how to undergo this mission, and during one of the exercises, this is simulated, one of them is killed. If anybody hasn't seen the movie, I'm not spoiling anything, I promise. It's a scene where they're doing a simulation exercise, so it's not an actual death. But when they're doing the after action review in the hot wash, he says to the pilot, he says, "Okay, well then, why did your wingman get killed?" And he explains. He said, "Well, this happened and this happened and this happened." And he says, "No." He says, "I want you to explain it in terms that his family will accept at the funeral." And he says, "Well, that's not possible. There's nothing that they're gonna accept because it was preventable." And that's the same kind of thing here, is that, we want to get that level of reliability so that should something happen, it's an outlier that is not caused by something that we could have actively prevented. And that's where that reliability comes into it, is that we keep building those procedures and keep building the controls to the point where the potential for negative outcome gets lower and lower. And that's I also keep thinking, like when I was in the military, for example, is if you're doing anything with explosives, like for example, if you have a hand grenade, you pull the pin on the grenade, and then when you release it, you always tell everybody in earshot, frag out, which means fragmentation out, so that everybody knows there's about to be an explosion that has a 5 meter blast radius in all directions. And it doesn't matter if you're the only person in the area. If, like, for example, if you're gonna toss the grenade and there's nobody within 500 feet of you still say frag out. That way it's part of the muscle memory and it's always something you do, which builds that reliability. So people don't have that ability to get complacent about it, and they circumventing, "Oh, there's nobody around, I'm just gonna do it." It's just always gonna be part of it. And I've heard of people doing the same kind of thing with needles, where, if there's a sharp, they immediately tell everybody, there's an open sharp right now, and if it's contaminated, I got contaminated sharp, and that way everybody knows to keep that area clear, or not to hand it off or whatnot, and that, they have the neutral zone for that purpose. So there's a lot of variables there, and that's important stuff that y'all are talking about. I was going to ask, as a related question, have y'all seen in your experiences any issues with workplace violence tying into sharps or needles or exposures to blood or body fluid or anything of that nature?
I don't have experience with that, but that's an interesting leap.
I have not had that experience.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. I've heard a couple of situations. I haven't seen them myself, but I've heard of them where people have told me these nightmare stories of somebody that in an operating room, somebody that started to get irritated with somebody, and they said one story was somebody had nitrile gloves that had been covered in blood and body fluid, of course, in the OR, and they took off one of the gloves and threw it at one of the other nurses or things of that nature. And I thought, well, that extends definitely beyond the exposure into workplace violence. And I've also heard of situations and people in the ER, they're going to do a blood draw or to start an IV, and the patient became combative and tried to grab for the needle or the IV and pull it, and the employee got stuck with it during that process. So I didn't know if y'all have seen or heard of anything of that nature. But that would definitely be important.
I haven't, but one thing that does come up, and it doesn't happen very often, Corey, but it does come up, and again, it touches on, the emotional factor. I've recently had someone who had a needle stick injury, and the patient, and he has the right to. He does, there's no doubt about it, refused to, have his blood drawn, and just would not was not willing to do that. And that all always adds an element of anxiety for staff, right? Because, this awful thing happened, And now the person that, and he has the right to exercise that, doesn't want to, have his blood drawn or have labs done. So it's just, it's an extra element that's upsetting, I think, and it disappointing, if you will, when that happens. And it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's always disappointing, and it just adds this and another piece that the employee has to deal with.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we had a good conversation about that same topic related to the increases in workplace violence related to the last several years and, heightened tensions because of the pandemic and a lot of protocols that unfortunately a lot of people did not agree with and things of that nature. So there's been a lot going on there, but definitely great perspectives. So that kind of brings us to the last part of the conversation, which, if we get on the hierarchy, of course, we have the elimination, substitution, engineering, administrative controls, and then your personal protective equipment. So the big challenge with needle sticks and sharps injuries, of course, is that, as far as I know, there does not exist a puncture-proof pair of gloves, but they've certainly made increases in puncture resistance, and then of course you've got the PPE for a number of other reasons like splashes and things of that nature. But I was going to ask y'all, what are y'all's perspectives on PPE? Dr. Gallagher, let's start with you this time. Any thoughts on PPE?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of thoughts except to just ask that question: is this something that's consistently used? And back to the, enforcing some of the precautions. I think that's really the issue. But I appreciate you asking me the question, but that might be a better question for Lisa.
I'm
Awesome.
actually going to echo what you said, Dr. Gallagher, and that's what I think, Corey, too, as well, is the equipment is out there. It's just being, consistent in using it. I think that's an important piece. And safety is consistent hard work. And yeah, it's tiring. And I think the trick of it is integrating it into who we are, where we just don't even think about it. You do it all the time, consistently, and you just learn to live with it. And that's the challenge. And that's the challenge for human beings, right? That's the work that we have to do. It's not easy work, but it's necessary. It's critical. And not doing it is just too darn costly. It's just too darn costly. So, I think that's where, our challenges are. Let's use what we have. That's the big challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah, and to y'all's point, that's what's going to build that reliability is the consistency. Is that when we start making exceptions and bypassing protocols, then it creates the potential for other bypasses or other exceptions, and then the reliability kind of falls like a house of cards. So yeah, definitely great input as we want to watch out for those sorts of things. So this is kind of the end of the hierarchy there. So what I was going to ask lastly before we wrap it up today is if y'all have any other thoughts, anything that we haven't touched on, or any other kind of tangential issues, anything that you want to bring up, anything or anything you want to plug, any questions, comments, concerns, or complaints, we'd love to hear it. Lisa, we can start with you. Anything you want to add to the conversation today?
Yeah, one thing I would like to see, Corey, is that's central in all of our work. We talked about it, throughout the conversation, is culture. And part of what I would like to see more of an emphasis of is when you see something, say something, right? We see people not active. You just talked about it, people not activating or feeling like they're going to pass a protocol. And I hope that we see organizations work on their resolve on this. I don't care who you are in the organization. If you're not using our safety protocols, that I feel comfortable enough to call you out on it. And it's not just for your good, it's for my good, and it's good for everybody else's good.
Mm-hmm.
you don't have your mask on. I don't care if you are an administrator. I'm going to say this to you because you impact everyone else's safety. If you're disposing of things improperly, I see it, that I'm comfortable enough to know that the organization will back me, and we've created the kind of culture, if you will, that I could talk to you without the nightmare scenario that you talked about, Corey, of, you know, even going to a workplace violence situation, an aggressive kind of response. And, you know, that kind of thing is avoided. But we create an environment where we're comfortable, and you can help me by pointing it out to me. And I can also receive it without looking at it as an act of aggression. If, for example, Dr. Gallagher says, hey, Lisa, you didn't activate this or you didn't put this, it's not an affront to me, but it's a promotion of safety for us. That's what I would love to see.
Yeah, I think that says it all for me. I think sometimes the key to that is being comfortable with that crucial conversation. And I love what you said, Lisa, about, you know, even if it were someone in leadership who came down, to be able to take that person aside and say, you know, you're a fabulous leader, and that's why I'm having this conversation. People follow you, you know, and let's talk about the mask wearing or whatever. But I do think that that's a really important element. And we do, if we see something, say something. And that's how we raise this whole level of safety and you know, and taking care of ourselves and our colleagues, because it's just as important as taking care of our patients, in my opinion. So, Corey, thank you so much for inviting me. I know I'm not an expert in this area. Lisa, it's been so nice talking with you because you are the expert. And so I appreciate your willingness to let me be on this call.
Wow, this was so much fun, and I learned so much. Thank you so, so very much, Corey, for inviting me. Dr. Gallagher, I hope we speak again. This was just great fun.
Yeah, I agree.
That's great. We appreciate both of y'all being here. And as always, you know, you both have an open invitation back where, as always, we'll continue to discuss all the relevant safety issues. We'll continue to discuss culture change, leadership, everything that goes into our field. You know, we're always happy to hear your voices on. So we'll certainly extend the invitation when we get back online. For everybody listening, this will actually be probably our last podcast until the winter. So there's just a lot going on right now with the monkeypox situation and the continued developments and a lot of things happening. So we may take a little break if we're able to do some in the next few months. That'd be awesome. But we're gonna have to slow down just a little bit for now. But in the meantime, if you haven't seen it yet, definitely check us out. We're on anchor.fm/AOHP, and we're up to 41 episodes, and so we have all kinds of great things up there. Today's episode is actually a part of a double header where we have today's great conversation. Then we also have another episode on needle stick and Sharpe's injury prevention with Dr. Mitchell and Dr. Yule. And so between the four perspectives, we have a great amount of information. And then we also have topics such as workplace violence. We have air filtration, air circulation. We have respiratory protection. We actually just did a great panel on respiratory protection with some NIOSH scientists. And so there's a lot to see and hear on there. And we hope you'll take advantage of that. Otherwise, we got some webinars coming up. If you haven't seen the ads on those, definitely check them out. It'll be on AOHP.org. And we're going to have a webinar coming up on active shooter prevention and response, which is going to have a gentleman named Vaughn Baker, who runs a company called Strategos International, and they've got some really interesting information on there about situations that have already happened, what they've learned from them, and what we can use going forward. So, as always, AOHP members have free access to the webinars, and they come with CNEs. So we hope you'll take advantage of that as well. But like Dr. Gallagher mentioned earlier, the national conference is coming up next week in Austin, Texas. So Region 2 is proudly hosting that which is just about 2 hours from where I'm sitting right now. So we hope that we'll see you there. But if not, definitely keep in touch, and we'll see you at the chapter, regional, and national events. But
Right.
all that being said, we're gonna wrap it up right now, and we'll catch everybody real soon. Lisa and Dr. Gallagher, again, thank you so much for being here, and thank you everybody
Thank
to
you,
listening.
Corey.
Yeah, thank you both. This was fun.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, everybody have a great day, and we'll catch you real soon.